Hi, I'm Leola. I'm a sacred intimacy mentor and muse and the host of this podcast. Talk Tantra to Me introduces a playful perspective on sacred sexuality. My intention in this podcast is to integrate intimacy and spirituality, empowering you to reclaim your eroticism. It is my mission to inspire you to let go of shame, fear, and limiting beliefs to be present as your highest self in every moment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Now, let's talk Tantra. Hello, lovers, and welcome. I want to start off by saying I am so blessed to be in a position to suggest tips and tools and even products that can help you lead a tantric life of liberation and expansion. And one of my absolute favorite places to purchase spiritual and sexy items is Wands. Wands.com, spelled W-A-A-N-D-S. Wands sells, you guessed it, crystal pleasure wands, along with so much more, including yoni eggs, free bleed blankets, other amazing products for yoni steaming. I've been using these products and products similar to them for the better part of a decade, and they have been incredible allies in my journey of sexual healing and expanding my orgasmic potential. And I'm so grateful to be friends with the owner, Courtney. She's amazing. She has so generously provided us all with a discount code for 15% off. And that code is Leola. L-E-O-L-A. You can use it on their website, www.wands.com. Again, the code is Leola, L-E-O-L-A, for 15% off. I'll also make sure that this is linked in the show notes. So thank you for listening, and you're welcome for the inevitable pleasure and healing that is coming your way with these products. Now let's get into the episode. Welcome to Talk Tantra to Me. It is such an honor to be holding space for this divine knowledge to make its way into your ears and lifestyle. Today, I talk Tantra with Damian Bowler. He is the founder of Evolve Relating, a path to explore intimacy and relationships as the vehicle for evolution, healing, and growth. I absolutely love that. I say that the primary intention for all of my relationships is to help me become even more in alignment with my highest self, to grow and to evolve. So I really love that we're going deep on this topic in today's episode. I'm so grateful to Damian, his content, so appreciative that he's here on the podcast to offer his perspective of living an expansive life. So thank you for being here, Damian. Why don't you start by telling us a bit about your journey with, stepping into the space of intimacy, coaching, founding, Evolve Relating? How did you discover this passion and purpose?
It's like, when I hear that question, I'm like, well, how far back do we want to go? I think that I was raised in a Buddhist household. My parents are both very devout Tibetan Buddhists. They've been practicing since before I was born. That was how they met. And so I was raised in a household that had kind of a spiritual path at the center of it. And I think perhaps because of that, there was always a desire, or like there was instilled in me earlier a sense that there was something to awaken to. There was somewhere to go, right? There was something that was beyond this world. But maybe because of the solo nature of this path and the ways that my father would meditate long hours in his little meditation room. And sometimes the only way I would get to spend time with him was if I would meditate next to him. This is like a 4 or 5 year old child. I don't remember when, but there was some time in that early part of my life where I was like, I don't want to do this alone. Like, I want to do this with somebody. And I think that was very alive for me from a young age. But then I really struggled with girls growing up, like really, really struggled. My early experiences were quite humiliating in primary school. My 8 and 9 year old self was rejected and really ridiculed, and all the way through high school was really an uncomfortable experience for me. So there was a need to learn how to relate to women. There was a need to discover what it was that would have me have the kind of connections that I want. And that was in the background for quite a long time. And I think it really kicked off in my early 20s when I found The Multi-Orgasmic Man by Mantak Chia in a secondhand bookstore. I think I was like 20 or 21 when I read that book. And I was like, okay, here's a direction. Here's somewhere I can go. And obviously I thought, you know, sex would be the if I got really good at sex, then I would be able to find a really great girlfriend and keep her and it'd be all wonderful. But that wasn't the case. You know, sex can be wonderful and you can still have a damaging, toxic relationship. My first girlfriend cheated on me. I cheated on her. It was a mess, you know, like later on. I mean, I think that was just an unfolding process from my 20s onwards of just continually finding new tools. Like this relationship experience isn't working well. What other tools are there? And so I went down a process. I found it authentic relating as a tool and learned how to communicate more effectively. That didn't alleviate the kind of anxious tendencies that would occur inside of relationship and my fears of abandonment and the anxious avoidant dances that would play out. Later, I learned about attachment theory. I was like, oh, okay, this is something else. That makes sense of all of that. And, you know, and then, okay, attachment smoothing out, but then where do we generate our romantic and erotic chemistry? Okay, polarity. So it's just been this process of just exploring and cultivating tools for this purpose or this desire to have a relationship that would grow and allow me, like you said, and you were saying before, of like, allow me to grow into who I'm meant to be, you know, like the life that I'm supposed to live and the love that I'm supposed to experience.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. It's interesting. I think that what people don't realize, you know, people are really drawn to like learning about what will help amplify their sexual experiences, whether it be like with themselves or with another, but it's just this like draw into those parts of like the learning piece when it comes to relating. But what they don't realize is that you can only go as deep in your sexuality as you've gone in, as deep in yourself. Like the more that you've cultivated, you know, self-intimacy and practiced how that shows up in a relationship, in a partnership, that's directly reflected into the capacity to have consistently good sex. Cause I think that it's totally possible to have really amazing like chemistry with a person and it feels really great. But oftentimes that like dies down as well over time. And it's really about having that intimacy with yourself and having those relating practices that create longevity and consistency in your polarity and sexual desire. So I heard you speak a bit about attachment theory as well as polarity. And I'd love if we could briefly, just for anyone that's like brand new or could use a refresher, could you give us a little bit of a basic lesson on those two different lenses?
Totally. Totally. And before I do that, I just want to acknowledge what you said there around sex. You know, like sex is often the draw. I think we have a cultural fascination with sex, right? And then, you know, I know that that was very much my draw. I hunted for sex for a long time. And, you know, after some period of time and having all the sex that I could want, I realized that that's actually, it's just a small part of what it is to be in relationship, you know, and that there are things that make relationships so much more worthwhile. So sex is often the foot in the door, but it's not, you can have great sex and have a toxic relationship. You can have great sex and feel completely alone all the times that you're not having sex. You can have great sex and not be able to communicate with the other person and share the deepest parts of you. You can have great sex and not grow and evolve with this person. Like sex doesn't necessarily lead to any of these other things. They're all skill sets. They're all these interconnected sets of skills that we need to develop to have deep relationship. And that's where we're heading here. It's like, okay, well, we have attachment and we have polarity, which are two skill sets. I view them as skill sets. Okay. They're theories, right? You know, and they're conceptual theories at the root of them. But in order to use them functionally in our relationship to have the kind of relationship that we want, we have to view them as skills to develop. So Attachment is essentially, the way that I view it, is related to how we bond to other humans. So we're wired to bond. We are social creatures. We need to bond for our survival. When we're a child, when we're a baby, an infant, we can't walk, we can't move, we can't defend ourselves, we can't do anything. We are completely dependent upon our caregivers, usually our parents, right? And so we need to bond to them, and they need to bond to us. They need to view us as caring for us as a baby is more important than caring for themselves. And this is the parenting instinct that most people will have when a woman births a child. She's like, that's actually more important than my own well-being, right? At least for the early parts, right? And that's part of the bonding experience. So we're designed to bond. We're designed to bond to our family groups, to our tribe, essentially. And we're designed to bond romantically too, because that allows us to create functional pairings that then can raise successful children into the world. So we have this biological mechanism inside of us in our nervous system, parts of our nervous system that is wired to connect and create a bond. And a secure bond is essentially one where I feel safe with you. I feel like you've got my back and I've got your back. And I'm like, I know you're there and you know that I'm there. And then we can like kind of relax, right? But the problem is, due to modern day parenting, there is a lot of disruption to this bonding mechanism, that children don't get the opportunity to bond properly to their parents, and often by no fault of the parents. Sometimes it can be. Sometimes it can be trauma. Sometimes it can be abusive parents. Sometimes it can be narcissistic parents. Sometimes it can simply be they've had bad parenting advice. Sometimes they're too busy, you know, focus on their work, and they're not able to give the level of reassurance that a developing nervous system needs to know that it's safe in the world. And so we develop what's called insecure attachment. And insecure attachment is essentially a failure to bond in a way that feels secure. So we're constantly on edge, thinking that we may be abandoned at any moment and that we're not worthy of being bonded to. And so that can drive a lot of relating behavior. And so then, when we get into romantic relationships, that latent, you know, you can feel really good on your own. I love to say it's easy to feel secure when you're single. You can be like, I'm good, life is great. And then you get into a relationship and suddenly all these weird behavioral patterns come out. Suddenly you're like anxious all the time, or texting all the time, or like suddenly you get really close to someone and you're like down-regulating by like going, I'm finding all of these flaws and I think they're not the one. These are anxious and avoidant patterns that are there to protect this insecure nervous system.
Yeah, beautiful. Great overview of that. And if anyone's like curious about learning more about their attachment style and how to figure out what your attachment style is, I read the book Attached and that changed things for me. It's a great just like overview of, you know, the avoidant attachment style versus the more anxious attachment style. And usually these people find each other. The anxious person finds the avoidant and vice versa. And the point of that is that it's a perfect pair for your trauma, right? Like the avoidant person severely triggers the attached person and vice versa. And it's like, really, it's an invitation to grow actually, which is really powerful. But also like, if you're not conscious that that's what's happening, it's like, why is this always happening to me? Why am I always like bonding with this person that like doesn't prioritize me? Doesn't have time for me. I'm always
chasing unavailable people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's where I found myself in. And then I noticed for myself, in the past, especially, I would notice that then once I had the commitment from someone else, then I would start to be avoidant. Like it was like, I was anxious in the beginning. And then once it got real, like the avoidant piece comes out. So you can also be mixed. I forgot what it's called when you're mixed. It's like complicated or something.
They often call it disorganized, but disorganized. I want to offer a little bit of an updated version of my perspective on attachment as well. And I think that like attachment has become increasingly widely known, and just like anything that starts getting widely known, it becomes a bit dogmatic, you know, becomes a bit dogmatic, and people get really concerned with what's my attachment style. And I want to just add a little bit of a different lens. Attached is a great book, by the way. It's a little bit biased against the avoidance, though. It's a little bit like negative towards avoidant attachers and doesn't really explain their pain. It's like avoidance are bad, avoid them. You know, actually there's a lot of pain in the avoidant attachment system, and they can also deeply heal as well with the right kind of work. But what I want to say there is it's like it's not really, the way that I think of it is it's like we're insecurely attached, which means that our nervous system doesn't have the ability to bond effectively. And from there, we display certain behavioral patterns. We've developed an array of behavioral adaptations that are in relation to that insecurity. And some of those patterns are what we'd call anxious tendencies, which is the like the texting all the time and starting to freak out when they're not responding. And like, you know, there was times in my life I definitely and display more anxious tendencies. But as you point out, we can also have avoidant tendencies. Once you get committed, you're like, okay, I'm out, right? You know, and I know that experience too. You know, there was times in my deep anxiety in relationships, I'd go into mild panic attacks when my partner would leave the room. Like the anxiety got so bad. She'd go to another room and I'd be like freaking out. I'm like, what is happening to me? So, you know, and these are the like, when you think about the baby, and you go all the way back to a baby, when mom leaves the room, the baby's like a wolf could come in and just bite my head off right now. So the baby screams and is like anxious and like, come back here. So that's kind of the roots of them. But I want to say is that we're not necessarily a style in that it's not a sentence. We're not sentenced to, I am going to be anxious or I'm going to be avoidant. And I think that's important to look at because it goes, I have these behavioral patterns that display as anxiety, or I have these behavioral patterns that display as avoidance. And what I need to do is I need to reconcile these behavioral patterns and find different patterns. And when I find different patterns, I find patterns that actually lead to soothing my nervous system. And that's the skill set we're developing here, is the ability to soothe our nervous system on our own and recognize that if I'm going anxious or avoidant, I'm in a state of distress. And then we're also learning to find patterns to soothe with another person. So ways of calming each other down. If my partner starts feeling a bit avoidant, there's ways, it's more often than not, she's feeling like she's about to be abandoned. So I can reassure her nervous system calms down and she opens more, and vice versa. Sometimes when I get a bit anxious, it's like there's a fear that I'm about to be left. If I'm reassured, my nervous system calms down. I open again. We go into what's called the social engagement system, which means that we're able to bond again and everything feels really good. And you can, for anyone who's listening, you can notice like when you're triggered, like we're insane, right? Like just absolutely insane. The kinds of thinking we can go into and the stories we can make up about our loved ones is just nuts. Like suddenly they're the devil and they're horrible and this and that. And we want to yell at them and tell them all these things. And then when you're regulated, they're beautiful and you love them and you want to be close to them and you want to be affectionate and you want to make love. And it's like literally that switch in the nervous system that we need to learn to keep in a secure position.
Yeah, 1,000%. I like to say that all of these things are tools and not rules. Like people can tend to take on the same sort of, you know, like, oh, well, I'm a Virgo, so that's just who I am. It's like, oh, well, I'm avoidant and that's just it. And it's like using it as a crutch or pigeonholing yourself rather than seeing the opportunity here is really important. And again, seeing it as a tool, not a rule. It's one tool in the toolbox.
Totally. I love that. I love that statement, a tool, not a rule. And to recognize that anxious or avoidant tendencies block intimacy. They will destroy our intimacy. If we have latent patterns that are anxious or avoidant, these habitual things, we will never be able to experience deep intimacy. They will always destroy it. They will always get in the way. We'll get over the honeymoon period in a relationship or a year or 2 years in, and suddenly the fights and the conflicts will get so strong, and it's usually an attachment pattern that's playing out. And if we don't resolve it, we would just leave that relationship and go to another one and experience the same thing and experience the same thing and experience the same thing. It's like we have to repattern our nervous system. We can't have intimacy and run these patterns at the same time.
Yeah, 1,000%. So we have this one set of tools known as the attachment theory.
That's right.
Let's talk about polarity. Can you lay the foundation for that so people can understand as we merge them?
So the way that I view polarity is it's really one of the fundamental laws or rules of the universe, in that we live in a dualistic universe. So that means that there are always opposites, and the opposites create each other in a way, you know, like up creates down. You can't have down without up. You can't have up without down. You can't have hot without cold. You can't have cold without hot. It's comparative against the other side. And when you have these opposites in relationship to each other, they create energy. Like when you have a plus and a minus sign of a magnet, you create an electromagnetic pull, which is a certain type of energy. So polarity at its fundamental is about energy, and it's about creating certain types of energy through what I like to call complementary reciprocal opposites. So we think of this as masculine and feminine. When you have masculine traits and feminine traits and they meet each other in certain forms, we create energy. And that energy that we most commonly associate with polarity is romantic or erotic energy. We experience sexual chemistry and we experience the romantic feelings of love. That's often what we experience from polarity. And, you know, I can simply go into, and again, tool versus rule, right? It's like when I recognize polarity as a tool, I recognize that I'm a whole being with masculine and feminine parts inside of me. You know, when we take it all the way to the top, feminine is more kind of being, masculine is doing, masculine is directed, feminine is like non-linear. It's right. We have these kind of penetrative awareness versus diffuse awareness. We have these kind of tendencies, right? But we all exhibit them, right? Like if you were to only display feminine qualities, you wouldn't be here recording a podcast. You'd be like lying in bed self-pleasuring, or, you know, you're just like, you wouldn't want to work. You wouldn't want to do that. Like it wouldn't be in your vernacular, right? And that can be really challenging when people get into polarity and go, right, well, that means I have to be purely feminine or purely masculine, but it doesn't exist that way. The universe doesn't work that way. Like we have this beautiful symbol of the yin yang, which is an ancient kind of Taoist symbol to kind of represent life. And inside of yang, there's a little bit of yin, and inside of yin, there's a little bit of yang, which means that we are a whole being composed of all of it. And so then when we display those characteristics in relation to each other, we create arcs of energy. And we don't necessarily need to run it all the time. We run it to generate energy. If I was to go up to my partner and I like drop into like a very strong presence, like a penetrative presence, and I like gaze at her from that place, she will naturally, her body will start to undulate and open. That's just what will happen because we are creating an arc of energy between us. And that's what polarity is. Polarity to me is a tool or a skill set to create energy, mostly romantic, erotic energy, but we can also create energy of abundance and other things through this dynamic.
Beautiful. And I love the teachings of polarity. And I mean, in Tantra, the teaching is that we do have an inner masculine and we have an inner feminine. Everyone has it. And a part of the journey is finding the balance between them, right? Yeah. And I've loved finding that in my own life, but also finding places where I can explore more of my femininity, specifically in my marriage, versus where I can really express my masculinity, like in my business. And what a gift that I get to explore this range in this lifetime. And that's part of why I sometimes have steered away from some lineages of polarity, because there can be this sense of like, I don't like to feel controlled and pigeonholed into my body, which expresses as feminine, and then having to only be in this more feminine dynamic, which at times can have this, you know, my understanding is that some of the teachings can kind of perpetuate some patriarchal or teachings that like don't feel empowering to me. They don't empower my feminine. And I think that that's the thing, is that some of these lineages are like casting a shade on the powerful pieces of the feminine, like the feminine intuition and the feminine, you know, power of seduction, and the places where they're like, actually there's the most power in those places. But it's my belief that there's a little bit of a fear of that power, and that's why some of it's been shut down. But I'm curious for you to speak into some of the shadow of the polarity as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the moment that anything becomes prescriptive, becomes dogma, we're going to be in shadow. Right. The moment we classify masculine or feminine and say, this is what masculine is. And if you're a man and you want to be in a, and this is what a lot of them, especially these modern day polarity teachings do, say, like, if you're a man and you want to be in a polarized relationship, you have to be masculine and that's it. And so we automatically, and same with, if you're a woman and you want to be feminine, you want to be in a polarized relationship, you have to do this. This is how you have to behave. And this is how you have to behave in relation to each other. And that's it. And the moment we create those kind of limitations, we have literally cut parts of ourselves out. And it can feel good at first. I can see why it's relevant, especially if we've because we live in a world now where there has been a tendency towards women having to identify more with some of their masculine parts due to the nature of the changing workforce and kind of women's liberation and equal rights. And what men have kind of tended to be a little bit more feminine due to like fear of expressing masculine power and demonization of the patriarchy. And also, I believe it's a developmental process that we're undergoing in which we are learning more deeply that we are whole, we have both. Mm-hmm. So there's this unconscious cultural development that is occurring where women have naturally had to understand more of their masculine part, their agency, their freedom from the masculine by living that part of themselves, by ceasing to outsource it. And same for men, learning that they have, you know, a lot of early men's work is emotionally focused, right? And men learning how to feel themselves, which is more feminine, right? But in order to move to a more integrated state, we actually have to balance that. I need to learn about those parts of myself so I can meet a woman deeper in those parts of her and vice versa. And then we can also meet each other from increasing places of wholeness. But the moment we start to limit it and go, this is what masculine is, and this is what feminine is, and this is what man is, and man is only masculine, and you're only allowed to do this, and you're only allowed to do this, we are in limitation. We lose parts of ourselves, and we are living in a dogma which is going to hurt over time, especially if we're an expansive being. And the reason why I say, like, it can feel exciting at first, especially if I've been, as a woman, I've been a bit too masculine and it's like, oh God, I'm tired of doing that, right? Like, I'm exhausted. And if a man, I've been a bit soft and I'm like, you know, I'm feeling a bit flaccid and devoid of purpose, like it can feel really good to like uplift that masculine part of myself. And so there's this initial rush of like, this feels really good. And when you do that, there will be that generative energy. You'll feel higher levels of sexual chemistry and higher levels of romantic chemistry, and your love will ignite. But if you stay there without moving into the totality of self, eventually there'll be this sense of like missing out on parts of ourselves. You know, we won't get the full expression of ourselves. And, you know, and then some of us like can see and feel that, you know, and eventually go, no, I don't want that, right? We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and be like, right, well, there's beautiful beneficial aspects of expressing this energy in relationship to each other, like with your husband. When you bring your femininity towards him and he brings his masculinity towards you, it probably feels really, really good. But if you were to stay in that all the time, only that, you'd probably feel very limited in your ability to express the rest of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting as well that what can actually create greater mastery of the masculine or the feminine is actually exploring the other. So for example, we become a better, a masculine man becomes a better master of his masculine energy by understanding his emotions so that he can hold his feminine partner with a type of reverence that inspires safety and surrender and trust, and vice versa. You know, so it's like actually to really take on these practices holistically, there gets to be an understanding of the other. And I think that's one thing that's sometimes missed. Hello, lovers. Please bear with me for a brief interruption with a vulnerable share and offer from my heart. So when I first began my journey with spiritual intimacy and sacred sexuality, all I could afford were books and free podcasts. I was just out of college in my early 20s and honestly very, very broke. And I'm so grateful for all the complimentary, kind words and affordable wisdom that have gotten me where I am today. Price shouldn't deter you from healing. It shouldn't deter you from living the life you love or from reclaiming the most powerful energy in your body. It's my belief that time and commitment are also very powerful investments, especially when you're just dipping your toes in the water. You'll know when it's time to make the bigger cash investments in your journey, but let's begin together today with free love from my heart to yours. As you've already discovered, this podcast is free and it includes so much life-changing wisdom, but I'd also love to guide you to some free offers that are on my website, including a downloadable sexual shadow work workbook and a pleasure positive meditation. Both of these resources are amazing places to start in integrating the tantric principles of expansion and liberation into your life. And you can access these at www.talktantratome.com. www.thebrainwashed.com/free or find a direct link in the show notes. Now let's get back to the episode. I specifically loved in one piece of your content where you talked about the daddy-daughter dynamic that sometimes shows up in polarity teachings. And it's an interesting concept because there's this piece where like a lot of women like the daddy energy sexually. And so there is like an interesting hotness to it. And there's a place where it is disempowering and pigeonholed. So I'd love it if you could speak into that as well.
So I would say the biggest misunderstanding of which this daddy-daughter dynamic comes out is thinking that polarity needs a power differential, thinking that polarity occurs because there's a gap in power. And in this sense, we elevate the power of the man. We put him into a daddy role, which means that he is in power over me. If I'm a little girl and my daddy has a sense of authority over me and my life, right? You know, when you're a child, you don't get to make all the choices for your life anymore. You're kind of a bit surrendered. And that can feel very exciting, especially like if you're a bit tired of like working really hard, the ability to release in and just being taken care of. But it's also, you know, as a power differential, it leads to, what do I want to say here? It's not a healthy expression of power, I don't believe, you know. And I would say it's part of what is being labeled as the patriarchy is that on a larger cultural scale, right? There is a sense that then masculine or male is the authority. He's the leader. He's the choice. He's the dominant, right? And that feminine is the subservient, which means that she doesn't get to experience her power. She is in the submissive role in relationship to that. And I just don't see how it generates energy over time. It sets up kind of unrealistic expectations, you know, and I've explored that dynamic a little bit myself, and especially like, you know, it can be fun in the bedroom, right? But I actually think the thing that's attractive about it is the expression of self-assertion and self-confidence in the man. That's actually the thing that's attractive. And it's like we can almost play that out by doing the power differential. We heighten that. We heighten his self-assertion, his confidence, and make it like really magnified so that it creates a lot of energy in that sense. And there's also an openness or a surrender, which is the feminine, right? The feminine side of that. But when we're playing out this dynamic, it goes into more of a submissive role, which, you know, like you said, it's hot, but it's the surrender in the feminine that we find attractive. But assertiveness and confidence and surrender don't actually have to be in a power differential to each other. They don't actually have to be. Surrender is powerful, right? There is a conscious volition around surrender that is deeply divine. When the feminine surrenders herself more and more deeply, she becomes more and more of everything, right? She becomes more and more of the experience that is. That's immensely powerful, right? A woman's orgasm is like hugely powerful, way beyond, you know, what a male orgasm is, right? And so I just don't, like, I can see that this dynamic can be very satisfying for people depending on where they are in their journey. It can be relieving. But I don't think that it can generate the kinds of energy that anyone who really wants to evolve and awaken into higher parts of themselves, I just don't think it can generate that kind of energy. Like it's limited. It's got a bar on how far it can go because it doesn't encompass the wholeness. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. And I love the way that you phrased that and how you framed surrender, because I'm so on the same page. Surrender can be incredibly powerful. It can be sacred. It can be, I mean, orgasm in of itself is a surrender. And the more that we surrender to the orgasm, the more we're actually feeling. And with the daddy-daughter dynamic and how it's in it, what where I see the issue is that it's taught as the only way to explore polarity in certain lineages. And I also want to say that I don't think that it's bad to explore daddy-daughter. I think, especially sexually, I think that it's like very much about what is your intention for doing it and are you doing it consciously? So for example, in my early 20s, I was dating men that were like 20 years older than me and like very much like playing out that dynamic intentionally and also unintentionally, but never consciously, just like, you know, choosing that. And it was very much a way to relive my wounds, relive my trauma, and also like, yeah, like to have a man take care of me felt really good because my dad wasn't always present in there in that same way. And at the end of the day, it took me healing that relationship to the masculine for myself on my own to now on the other side, there are moments where my husband and I play with that dynamic from a conscious space within a container. And then it's not projected into the other parts of our relationship. And I'm empowered and encouraged to bring a an equal amount of power. So there isn't a power differential holistically in the relationship. And it's fun to explore that at times, you know, intentionally, right? And consciously. So I just wanted to put that out there as well. It's all about the intention.
Totally. And I think like if like playing it out in mindful settings, and it might not even be daddy daughter, it's just playing with strong expressions of dominance, which is like a kind of ability to exert certain types of pressure on the other person, essentially, is what dominance is. And the surrender to that experience is the thing that feels really hot, you know. And the daddy-daughter is like a dynamic of that. But the problem with it is if we, like you said, is if we explore that as like, this is how polarity is supposed to be, we've got to recognize that it's ultimately disempowering, especially for women, infantilizing, right? It turns them into an infant. It diminishes responsibility, which can be great. You know, it's like, oh, I don't have to be responsible for the way that I feel. I don't have to be responsible for my emotional expression. I don't have to be responsible for taking care of my own life. I don't have to be responsible for anything. I get to outsource it all to daddy, which means I outsource my own masculine self if I'm a woman here. And then it's all his responsibility to contain her emotional expression, his responsibility to make her feel safe, to, you know, like hear her tantrums and all of that stuff. But it's very disempowering. And there was a point that I wanted to make there is that, where did that go? It kind of slipped out the back of my head. Sometimes when, you know, you go on the train and then there's a thought and it's like, oh no, we've drifted off. That's it. Like, I want to say that it's like I mentioned before, there's an element of the patriarchy, the large scale control of women's freedom there. And there's almost like a fear of women's power in that dynamic, right? Because if I'm playing the daddy part of it and I keep you small and I date women 20 years younger than me, and I kind of like manage them and contain them, there is inherent in that a fear of the fullness of a woman's expression and her power. So it's like we keep her small. The sad thing about that is the woman voluntarily enters into that as well, voluntarily perpetuates the reduction of her power and the limiting and diminishment. And I think that we have for hundreds of years now, perhaps even longer, had fear of women's power. We've had a constant need to suppress that power. And what we see when we play that out is there's a voluntary action around that. It's not just imposed, it's entered into willingly in this way by setting up these dynamics. There's almost a fear of her own power that plays out there as well. And her own power is expressed through responsibility and maturity. It's like when a woman becomes responsible for her own fullness of their experience, her own full expression, and then she enters into power. But that's a little bit scary because it's like, well, you know, I'm learning to use a rocket launcher, right? You know, yep. Like you're learning to use something that has immense power and I have to wield this thing in a way that's mindful. It's like, well, maybe if I don't use it at all and I pretend that I don't have it, you know, and enter into those dynamics where I'm, you know, I'm only playing with like plastic toys instead, right?
Yeah. And it is very scary, I think, for a lot of women. That's such a good point, because a lot of us didn't really have moms that were empowered in their holistic femininity. And maybe for many generations didn't have women in our family that were. And in fact, in generations not that far back, women who were fully empowered in their femininity, including in their intuitive oracular gifts, they were burned at the stake for being a witch, or if they were empowered sexually, they were cast out from society. So it's like, we still are living in those gene codes. And this generation is really one of the first generations where women can choose to explore their range and be all of it and have it be safe and intentional and conscious all at once. So it's a really powerful time. I'd love to now build a bridge between.
Can I just speak one more thing to that? Cause I love that. I love this kind of line of thinking, because the place where we want to go relationally, at least where I intuit, and I am certain many others intuit this space of like, there's something relationally that's possible. There's something that's possible in relationship. There's something that's possible for the evolution of our species, right? It can only happen from equal power. And equal power doesn't necessarily mean same, doesn't necessarily mean we express the same, doesn't mean we neutralize. One of the solutions to the patriarchy or the polarity dynamics is actually to neutralize, right? Well, let's all be the same and let's not have any masculine or feminine at all. And that's not an answer either. That actually ends up disempowering everyone overall. So there's a way of recognizing the differences in our power, you know, the oracular nature of the feminine, you know, and her ability to see and perceive things and intuit things, which is immensely beneficial when synergistically in relationship with the masculine and his gifts, right? And so we want to find ways, the point of this, and this is polarity as well, right? It's like we talked about polarity as creating erotic and romantic chemistry, but it also can create other kinds of energy, right? It creates energy of evolution. It creates energy of abundance. When we bring these types of gifts together, we bring them and we bring them into a wholeness. So I am a whole being with my whole range, and I meet my partner as a whole being with her whole range. And together we create a new whole that is inclusive of all of our gifts. And that's where we're heading. And we can't do that if we're reducing or limiting who we are. We're reducing or limiting our fit into rigid identities of masculine, feminine, daddy, daughter, these kind of dynamics. If we're like, this is how I must be, and we reduce that, we'll never be able to fully express those ranges, and we'll never be able to meet in that kind of union.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. So, so important. So, so true. And that really does set us up to, again, bridge into how can these tools of understanding attachment and also understanding polarity from a perspective that it's actually empowering of everyone involved, like with both of them together, we really have the capacity to create a new type of relationship, a type of relationship that's 1 + 1 = 3 and is really evidence for what's possible, you know, for our species. And that's so much of what your work is about, from my understanding. So I'd love to hear how that coalesces.
Totally. You know, and polarity and attachment are just two of the macro tools that I use in this work and the way that they work, right? And this is one of the biggest challenges that I think people have relationally, is that attachment gets conflated with polarity, because the anxious avoidant dance that you spoke about before around like they're attracted to each other is a polarity. It's a wounded polarity, right? Polarities tend to attract towards each other. The anxious plays a pole. The avoidant plays a pole. The anxious plays a wounded feminine pole, whether it's a man or a woman. Right, I am a man who had more anxious tendency, so I tended to play the wounded feminine in my relationships. The avoidant is like a wounded masculine pole, so whether a man or a woman, I tended to be drawn towards more avoidant women who were playing the wounded masculine parts, and they go together and they create polarity. And that polarity, like we said, generates energy, generates high levels of sexual chemistry and romantic feelings, leads to infatuation, and then leads to this dysfunctional dynamic that is push-pull. You know, it separates, splits up, comes back together, splits up, comes back together, splits up, comes back together, fights, conflict, the avoidant wants to run away, the anxious chases, the avoidant runs away more, the anxious gives up, turns away, the avoidant comes back, then they turn back together and go, wow, we're back together again, and on repeat, right? You know, and anyone who's been in that, it's a predictable cycle, right? It's very predictable. You do it long enough, you know, and long enough isn't even that long, 6 months to a year of that kind of dynamic, and you end up in an addictive pattern. The dopamine and distress in the nervous system leads us to like high levels of dysregulation, and we end up sexually addicted to this person. And then you try and break up and you go, no, this person's bad for me, but you can't because you keep ending up coming back and sleeping together again. And so we have to recognize that we can't generate our romantic and erotic energy from that dynamic. We can't use the anxious and avoidant tendencies to generate it, right? For an anxious person, there is something sexually exhilarating about an unavailable person. Someone who doesn't fully want us, but is kind of there, and the uncertainty about whether they're going to be in or out is exhilarating in a toxic way, right? And for the avoidant, there is something exhilarating about being wanted so badly by somebody. You know, there is a kind of power, right? Again, this power that plays out about being wanted. So we have to recognize that we have to resolve this anxious avoidant dance by learning to soothe our nervous system and not entering into relationship as the primary driver of our romantic and erotic energy, because that's what we want. That's what most people want when they're entering relationship. People might want, you know, they may have done some work, and I recently did a course on standards, and people are getting clearer around like, you know, some of the North Stars of what they really want. I want to be in a co-creative relationship, and I want to have family and all of these other things. But most people enter into connection because of the way it feels romantically and sexually. That's the entry point. That's the thing that we're kind of looking for. Is it exciting? You go out on the first date, and then am I excited or not? I'm not. Well, I don't think I want another date, right? And that's fine. You know, it's like we want that in our relationship. It's not the only part of our relationship. But if that is coming from this anxious avoidant, if I'm going on a date and I'm like, they're a little bit unavailable, and I'm like, ooh, butterflies going, and then like finish the date and they don't text me back in the evening, and I'm like now preoccupied about them, and they takes 2 days before they text me, and by the time they text me, I've spent so much time obsessing about them that I pretty much talk myself into an attraction, right? I'm in a recipe to damage myself. So when we tease these apart and we recognize that polarity in the romantic sexual, romantic erotic energy is created through a masculine feminine dynamic from a centered, regulated place, and we recognize that attachment, the way that our attachment system works is to help us bond to each other, which means it's not sexy. Attachment shouldn't generate sexual romantic energy. It should generate the energy of like, oh, I'm really safe with this person. Being safe with this person isn't necessarily sexy until we train ourselves to find it sexy, right? There's a time I remember in my own experience when I started to realize that I wouldn't get aroused unless I felt safe. Unless I felt like my partner was here and her heart was open, my body would not turn on anymore. I couldn't do it, right? Because I burnt myself out on the other pattern. So until we reach that point, we're like, ooh, the edgy, the uncertainty is the sexy, but we shouldn't be generating it in that way. We generate it from our masculine feminine polarity, and our attachment is so that we can have a sustainable ongoing bond with somebody where we feel like this person's got my back. I feel like I'm relaxed around them. I know how to be myself. I can be myself freely around them. I don't have to hide and contort myself into ideas of like, if I fully express myself, maybe they won't like me anymore. It's like, well, we're in the wrong place. So that's kind of how I bridge them, almost by like separating them and recognizing that they're doing different things, but we often make them try and do the same thing. We often try and use our attachment to create our polarity, and it doesn't work.
Yeah. I love the way that you explained that and bridged the world specifically around the anxious attachment being the wounded feminine at play and the avoidant being the wounded masculine. And again, we all have the masculine and feminine within us. So we could be playing out either or both of those dynamics, and what an invitation to mature those inner parts of ourselves. And yeah, with the safety piece, it's what we tend to find out with time once we have more regularity around our security, safety in the relationship, in ourselves, is that that actually is what creates a lot of yummy, juicy sexuality from a place where we can actually fully receive it and fully be in our bodies. It's like more of a body rather than like a lot of what we're feeling that feels so exciting about sexuality when is that we're addicted to the mind spiral and the chemicals that are firing in there, rather than like what's actually available when we create safety and we can explore more and talk and be fully in our bodies. Cause when we're just in our minds reeling, we're actually not present with all of the pleasure that's available. And that newness wears off. And then that's where like the sex dies and you just get in that relationship that's like at each other. So yeah, I love all this. I'm feeling like a natural, you know, starting to land the conversation. I'm curious if you have anything else that you want to bring to the listeners or close on.
I guess I just want to like highlight again, and it's been really sitting deep in my own personal inquiry at the moment, the nature of like, we have one of these cliches, right? It's like, you know, relationship is two whole beings coming together to create, you know, not two half beings. And we've been talking about the distinction between those two things here. The two half beings is when I'm only the masculine and she's only the feminine and we come together and create relationship. That's two halves, right? To create one whole. It's not two wholes, right? I don't get to be a whole being in that scenario. Or if we create a relationship through I'm the anxious pole and she's the avoidant pole or vice versa, that's two halves again. I don't get to be a whole. I only get to be half. And if we enter into relationship and we only become half of us in relationship, we will become dissatisfied eventually. We will feel limited. We will want to find ways to express the other parts of ourselves. We will find ways outside of the relationship, or we will become very frustrated in the relationship. And we will want to shake the relationship in certain ways. Women will probably try and, you know, tend towards stirring things up, and men will just like build their man caves or something like that. Like there'll be something, you know, there'll be something that wants to find its way to express more wholeness. And so I'm just sitting more deeply again. Like I love these cliche things because I find there's often a moment where it lands in me, the truth of it, and not as just an abstraction, as an embodied truth of understanding. And that two wholes, the recognition that I am a whole being, with masculine and feminine parts, all of it, right? And to have a relationship that is going to evolve, that is going to grow, that is going to have me become even more of myself, requires that I enter it into and continue to discover my wholeness in the relationship and create the space for my partner to experience the same as well. And that one whole being and one whole being creates a bigger whole, you know? Mm-hmm. So I am both whole. I am a whole Damien. And I'm also part of my relationship and learning to dance between those two things, recognizing that I am whole and I am part. I'm not just part and I'm not just whole, right? I'm both of those things. So that's just been sitting in me. You know, I hope someone who heard that has an aha moment, but I've been really enjoying that.
That really ties a bow on the whole conversation. Thanks for bringing that in. And thank you so much for being here, spending some time with us. And I want to express my gratitude to the listener. Thank you once more for opening yourself up to understanding yourself better, attachment theory, polarity, and self-love at the end of the day. So with so much gratitude and love, have a sexy and spiritual day. And I'll catch you next week on Talk Tantra to Me. Ta-ta. Oops, just kidding. Still here. I have one last thing for y'all. I want to say that the internet is a really, really special place. It's why we're all here right now. And many of us, including me, wouldn't have discovered Tantra or sacred sexuality if it weren't for this nifty invention of the 20th century. And almost none of you would have found my work and my vision without it. I love the internet and I deeply desire to expand beyond it to experience more real life, love, community, and connection. So I invite you to check out upcoming Tantra events at www.talktantratome.com/events or click the link in the show notes. I can't wait to give you a big squeeze in real life. Okay, now that's it. Ta-ta for real. Ta-ta.